It's been more than 2 years since a political operative told me to keep an eye on Rachel May, who at the time was hoping to wrest the Democratic nomination for state Senate away from incumbent David Valesky. Fast forward to today, and Senator Rachel May just completed her first term in office, and in recognition of this milestone, we wanted to look back at what this experience has been like. We spoke with the Syracuse area Democrat at the end of December. Welcome back to the show, Senator, and congrats on your reelection.
Oh, thanks so much, Dave. Great to be here.
So in 2019, the Senate Democrats really hit the ground running with their new majority, passing a lot of bills in January that had been held up by the Republican majority over the past 8 years. How were you able to keep up in that first month on the job with so much going on?
Well, that's a good question, because I don't even remember. It was such a whirlwind. I do remember, you know, we were at the same time we're trying to find the bathrooms and figure out where the elevators were. We were also having to learn about the budget and the whole process of the budget. And we were passing a lot of legislation. So it was a matter of having really good staff who were making sure I was in the right place at the right time, and very long nights, I guess.
Well, in terms of that staff, you know, that's a real important decision for new lawmakers, who they surround themselves with. And sometimes it can be, you know, close friends that people trust. Sometimes you turn to, you know, Albany insiders. Sometimes it's just the people that you meet along the way in your campaign. How did you come up with that staff? And did you feel like it was a group of people that served you well?
I can't say enough about my staff, and they've got a reputation, I think, throughout the Senate for being some of the most efficient and effective and thoughtful staff members anywhere. But I made a decision early on that I wasn't going to go with a lot of Albany insiders, because I had run as somebody who thought there were better ways to do things than the way they had always been done in Albany, and I didn't want those voices in my ear telling me, this is how it's done, this is how it's done. So I have one person who runs my office in Albany who had experience in the assembly, and she's been fantastic. And she's been our go-to person for finding out, you know, how do you actually, who has the power and where do we turn for this information? But otherwise, it was people who had worked on my campaign who believed that we could make this kind of change, and some local people here in Syracuse who just were deeply involved in the community and have been able to really connect me to the issues that are out there that I might not have been aware of before.
That approach to staffing your campaign kind of reminds me of an interview you gave to Capitol Tonight in April of 2018, shortly after the IDC had dissolved. And you talked about how you were running a campaign against cynicism. After 2 years in office, have you become cynical at all about politics and governing?
So I still think that the system in New York is broken, and the way that power is distributed by the Constitution is wrong. But in terms of being cynical about politics, I find myself wishing that people who do really have a jaded view of politicians could sit in on our conferences, because I think the biggest surprise for me has been serving with this group of people who are very diverse, come from all over the state and with really different perspectives, and are so dedicated and thoughtful and compassionate, and the discussions we have are just amazing. So, no, I am not jaded about it. And you know, the majority leader is a really uplifting personality, and I think we all have fed off of that energy that she brings.
Well, speaking of Senate Majority Leader Andrea Stewart-Cousins, what kind of relationship do you have with her, and how has that, I guess, evolved since you probably first got on her radar back in September of 2018 when you unseated incumbent David Valesky?
She has always been really supportive and surprisingly responsive. You know, she picks up the phone when I call her. I'm not sure I expected that, because she has so many demands on her time, but she's always there. But more than that, and this is something I said when we re-elected her for a second term as majority leader, that she heard me when I said that representing upstate was going to be hard. And I was hearing from people all around here that Democrats don't care about this region of the state, and it wasn't going to be possible for me to really help this region. And she heard me when I would say that, and she made sure that we held a lot of hearings here. Many of my colleagues came up here to tour, to visit schools or farms or businesses, to, you know, really try to understand what was going on in a city like Syracuse and a region like Central New York. And I think it's paid off, because we now have 5 new upstate Democrats representing fairly similar districts to mine. And, I think other candidates saw it, other voters saw it, that the Democrats really did care about this part of the state. And I give her a ton of credit for that.
We're talking with State Senator Rachel May, a Syracuse area Democrat, about her recently concluded first term in office. At least in pre-COVID times, lawmakers spend a lot of time together in close quarters, and I imagine you found ways to stay connected with your colleagues in 2020, even during the pandemic. So throughout those experiences, did you develop any close friendships? And if so, with who?
Well, I've stayed in touch really closely with most of my NOIDC cohort, because we worked together for a year before we came into office, trying to, you know, come up with common messaging and that sort of thing. So Robert Jackson, who sits right next to me on the floor of the Senate when we can sit there, is, I consider, a close friend, and Alessandra Biaggi. I have also, so right next to Robert sits Simca Felder, who is not someone I ever thought would become a friend, but because we sit there so closely, and he is, you know, he was a little bit on the outside, especially the first year when he wasn't in either the majority or the minority conference, I sort of got to talk with him a lot. And so it's been surprising to me where the friendships have developed. I am going to miss Velmanette Montgomery, who is retiring this year. She was surprisingly interested in agriculture and came up here when we had an agriculture hearing in my district. And she also came up here for a hearing on children and families. So I feel like we've connected on a lot of different planes that have been just, you know, things I just didn't expect. But it would be hard to pick anybody I don't feel like is either a friend or a potential friend in the conference.
Did you bond with any Republican lawmakers?
Not really, although Phil Boyle reached out a few times, and we've had some wonderful interactions. I remember one of the times when I brought a little change to the Senate was when I offered an amendment to a bill during committee. And he supported me in that and said, you know, I've been here for years and nobody's ever done this in committee before. And I didn't realize I was breaking all the rules, but he was wonderfully supportive of that. And he's a co-sponsor on my bill to raise revenue on the very wealthy. So I feel like he's a bit of a friend there.
During the course of running for office and now serving in the legislature, you've obviously done a lot of interviews with members of the media. And I'm curious, have you gotten to the point where you're comfortable with these types of conversations, especially if they're on television?
So the television ones I still have a little bit of a hard time with, just because the technology is so strange. For the Capitol tonight, for example, you sit in and stare at a blank wall and a screen that is showing you 2 seconds later and backwards. It's very disorienting. And I think if you don't do it often enough, it's hard to get used to that. But in terms of just feeling like I know what I want to say and I know how to get things out in sound bites, I'm learning that. I feel like I'm getting better at that.
Oh no, talking in sound bites. That's such a boring way of doing politics. And then you're going to say how you've learned how to pivot questions as well.
Well, I've learned that a little bit.
Okay.
The sound bites I don't think I'll ever be good at, and I definitely still talk in full sentences and think while I'm answering, and it frustrates my communications people, but I don't think I'm ever going to get there. But at least, you know, trying to fit it into a 5-minute interview, I'm learning how to do that.
In your 2 years, you got a bunch of big ticket items through the legislature, which have statewide implications. But as a senator, you also have, you know, that very local constituency, the fight in 53rd Senate District. And so I'm curious, is there maybe a narrow piece of legislation or a pile of money you secured or some agency issue you resolved that you're really proud that you were able to do in the last 2 years?
Sure. Yeah. The biggest one was the STEAM school here in Syracuse. So this was an idea that people had brought forward a few years back to take a disused, beautiful old high school building right in the center of the city and turn it into a regional high school for the arts and STEM disciplines. And I was excited about that both because reinvigorating that part of the city is a great idea, but even more importantly, the idea of a regional high school where kids from suburban districts would come and study with kids from the city feels like the first step to actually breaking down some of the racial segregation that we have here in our region. And so I jumped right on that, and I worked hard, and I had to bring my assembly colleagues along, and I had to really work the governor's office and the governor himself some to make sure that this stayed on the front burner. And it ended up in the budget in 2020 at a time when everything else was being cut. The $70+ million for that STEAM school got included in the budget. I'm really proud of that. That was collaboration with the mayor and with the school districts and everybody involved. So I feel like I learned a lot about how to get things done there, but I also came out with something I'm really proud of and I think it's going to make a difference in my community.
And after a quick break, we'll continue our conversation with Syracuse area Democrat Rachel May about her recently completed first term in office as a state senator.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.
We're continuing our conversation with Syracuse area Democrat Rachel May about her first 2 years in office as a state senator. What's the most thankless part of the job, which maybe the media and the general public doesn't know about?
Well, I would say before the pandemic, it was the fact that we're never home. There seem to be 3 or 4 evening events every night, and you're off. You know, on weekends there's pile ups of things that you have to go to, and all of them are important and all of them are valuable, but they wear you down. I would say during the pandemic, it's been more, and I think people would know about this, but the online kind of trolling, I think, has gotten worse during the pandemic. And that is hard, that feeling that you're always on view and fair game for people to attack is really hard.
Do you think that trolling is worse for you than, say, your male colleagues because you're a female lawmaker?
I definitely felt during the campaign that I was being attacked in ways that people might not go after a male lawmaker. But I think it's more that I'm more open kind of emotionally. I put things out there that matter to me emotionally, that maybe more than some of my male colleagues do, and trolls see your vulnerabilities and hone right in.
What about in the actual workplace itself? I mean, the Capitol hasn't always been the best place to work for women, even if they were elected officials. And while the atmosphere has radically improved, I'm curious, have you had to experience, you know, sexism even in your capacity as a state senator?
I haven't felt that from my conference at all. I would say from the Republicans in the Senate, I have felt treated a little bit differently. And for example, I don't understand why, but I was sitting between two men, and Republican male colleagues would come over and they would say hi to one of them and say hi to the other one, and they would walk right past me, and I never understood why. So I think there is something, you know, there are people who want the old boy network back, but for the most part, in terms of being able to get things done, I haven't felt any difference in terms of my gender.
Earlier, with regards to your legislative efforts to get that special school in the Syracuse area, you mentioned your interactions with Governor Andrew Cuomo. What have your interactions with the governor consisted of in the past 2 years since you took office?
You know, I haven't had a lot of face-to-face interaction with him on the STEAM school. It was a matter of when he came here for the state fair. I buttonholed him for a moment about that, but otherwise it's mostly been working with his staff and just making sure that we're keeping things on their radar that are important to us. I've got one now about the nursing home visitation, which is something I've been working on really hard. And it's been, you know, meeting with the Department of Health, meeting with the commissioner, working with the governor's staff as well, and just making sure they're aware just how important these problems are.
At least on the assembly side of things, there's a complaint that comes up from lawmakers that the central staff is almost too powerful, that they can wield more powerful than the lawmakers themselves. They've been around so long, they say what can get done, what can't get done. I'm curious, on the Senate side, have you encountered that at all, where you've basically run into these institutional roadblocks put up by basically staffers who are not elected? Or have you found that they, for the most part, are there to help you accomplish whatever it is that you want to do?
That's a good question. I haven't been in the assembly, obviously, so I can't compare. I do know we rely very heavily on the central staff to steer us right and to do the negotiations and that sort of thing. So there is some, especially right at in the last throes of creating the budget, that there's a feeling like, well, I don't know what's going on. And the only people who know what's going on are the central staff. But in general, I think in the Senate, they try very hard to be responsive to us. And I think that's been I think the majority leader has made that a priority so that we don't feel like we're being left out of the whole process.
How long is your commute to the Capitol? And before government went virtual, what would you do during your drive?
It was about 2 hours from Syracuse to Albany. And most of the time I would go with my chief of staff, Zach Zeliff, who has good taste in music, or we would sort of try to introduce each other to our musical taste. He developed these playlists that were the sort of Zach and Rachel playlists that were, you know, safe for work. And we did a lot of that. I learned a lot about musical genres I had no idea about before. But also just spending a lot of time making the phone calls I needed to make or reading up on bills that we were going to be looking at. So Zach would drive and I would use the time that way.
What kind of music did you force upon Zach?
We sort of came to a compromise around folk music. He liked very gritty folk music, and I would steer it into, like, out of the morose and into the more cheerful and with a bit of a beat. So we listened to the Wood Brothers a lot, who I didn't know anything about, but now I do.
Part of legislating as a senator means finding the right partner in the assembly who can get your bills through that chamber too. Have you developed a go-to partner in the People's House?
I have one partner, but I've worked a lot with Harry Bronson because he chairs the Aging Committee. So we've had a number of bills together. So he represents Rochester. Then I've had Al Sturpey here in my district, who we did some really important legislation to get help for small businesses all over the state from industrial development agencies. That's been a really important bill that we passed. And then Pat Fahey and I have a bill on creating a work progress administration here in the state to help us get out of the pandemic. And I've worked with her on a number of other things. We have bicycle legislation together. We share a lot of kind of outdoors interests in common. And then I've had downstate colleagues who've been really helpful with some of the other legislation that we've passed. So I've tried to work with a whole range of different people.
How do you unwind from work now? I mean, I assume you have some very long days. So what do you do to de-stress or for bed, I guess?
So we have the luxury of having a city that's not super crowded. So even during the pandemic, I've been able to take long walks, and we have beautiful parks around here. So my husband and I do a lot of going on for walks. My daughter was home for a couple of months, and she sort of started rating our walks on just how bleak the scenery was in the wintertime. So we go for for long, bleak walks these days. But in general, we do a lot of just getting outside and getting some fresh air and checking out the sunsets or the views from the drumlins here, which are pretty spectacular.
I recently completed season 4 of Fargo on FX, and on the show this year, there's a character whose name is literally Dr. Senator. And I'm curious, considering you have a PhD in Russian language and literature from Stanford University and happen to be a state senator, does that embolden you at all to break out the Dr. Senator Rachel May title at some point? Or are you going to go with the more humble, just state senator Rachel May for the foreseeable future?
For now, I'm okay with state senator Rachel May. I did tweet when Jill Biden was being in the midst of that controversy about whether she should call herself doctor, that she should go for it. And I don't use the doctor just because I do think Dr. Senator is a little bit cumbersome. But I mentioned to you before, there was a piece in the New York Times today about my nursing home legislation. And when they sent me the copy, it said Ms. May, and I said, can I be called doctor? And they went ahead and called me doctor. So I do think, I think it's important, especially for women, professional women, to assert our identity that way and not let it get steamrolled over.
I'm curious, in that conversation with the Times, did you frame it that way? Can I be called that? Or did you sort of say, I want to be called that? How did you approach it?
Well, I did it through staff, but I just said, I'm uncomfortable with being called Ms. Could it be doctor or senator?
Before you became a senator, did you use the honorific of doctor?
I certainly did with my students, either doctor or professor. It frustrated me because frequently they would call me Mrs. May, which isn't even an appropriate term in my case. But I wanted them to know that I have this credential and it means something. But with my friends or, you know, in ordinary interactions, I would not do that.
Well, we've been speaking with Dr. Senator Rachel May, who just completed her first term in office and begins her second term this month. Senator, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it and look forward to talking to you in this new term.
My pleasure, Dave. Take care and Happy New Year.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by Destiny USA. Shopping, dining, and entertainment all in one location. For more information, go to www.destinyusa.com.